Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are zooming in on a very specific coordinate in time. The year is 2026. Now, usually when we talk about future tech, we're wading through a lot of vaporware, you know, flying cars, cities on Mars, that sort of thing.
Right, the stuff that's always 10 years away.
Exactly. But the stack of reports we're digging into today paints a very different picture. The argument here isn't about what might happen in 20 years. It's arguing that 2026 is a sort of historical inflection point.
It really is. It's where five major technology trends are all simultaneously stopping the science project phase and actually deploying at scale.
That's the key distinction, isn't it? We aren't looking at lab results anymore.
Not at all. I mean, when you look at the data from Deloitte's Tech Trends 2026, the CV Insights State of AI, and even the International Banker FinTech Report, they all converge on one idea: maturity. The technology has basically graduated.
Right. And our mission today is to figure out what that graduation looks like for us. You know, the people actually living through it.
Yeah.
We're going to look at AI that doesn't just chat, but actually has a job description. Robots that are finally leaving the factory floor to fold our laundry.
That's the dream.
And the trifold revolution in phones, plus a financial system that's, well, it's getting invisible. But let's start with the big one. We've all been playing with chatbots for a few years now. We know the drill. Mm. You type a prompt, get some text back.
Mm.
But the reports say that era is effectively over. We're entering the age of agentic AI.
This is probably the most profound shift in the whole stack. To understand it, you have to look at the limitations of what we have right now.
Okay.
Generative AI, I mean, the ChatGPTs of the early 2020s, they're passive. They're brilliant, but they're passive. You ask a question, they give an answer. They don't do anything unless you poke them.
Right.
Agentic AI completely flips that. These are autonomous agents that understand a high-level goal, they plan the steps to achieve it, and then they execute those decisions, all without you holding their hand.
So, if I can use an analogy, the AI we have now is like a really smart intern who just sits there waiting for exact instructions. Write this email, fix this paragraph.
That's a perfect analogy.
And agentic AI is like hiring a manager.
Even better. It's like hiring a contractor. Let's say you want to build a mobile app for restaurant reservations.
Okay.
In the old generative way, you'd have to prompt the AI for the code. Then you'd paste it, run it, see an error, paste the error back to the AI. You know the loop. You are the engine.
Right, that painful 50-step loop.
Exactly. With agentic AI, the prompt is just, build a mobile app for reservations. And that's it. The agent analyzes the requirements, it designs the architecture, writes the code, runs its own tests, identifies the bugs, fixes them, and integrates the APIs. It loops until the job is done.
Okay, but we've heard promises like this before. I remember AutoGPT was a buzzword a while back, and it barely worked. Is this actually functioning in the wild, or is this just more marketing hype from Silicon Valley?
Well, the numbers suggest it's finally working. And the leap in capability is startling. Look at Devin from Cognition AI. They ran a benchmark on resolving real-world GitHub issues. I mean, actual coding bugs found in open-source projects.
Okay.
GPT-4, which for a long time was the gold standard, could essentially fix about 1.74% of them completely on its own, without a human stepping in.
Which is not great. I mean, 1.74% is basically random chance plus a little luck.
Exactly. It's helpful, but it's not a worker. Now compare that to Devin. In the same test, Devin resolved 13.86%.
Huh. You know, 13% still sounds low, though, doesn't it? If I hired a human employee who only finished 13% of their tasks, they wouldn't last a week.
That's the intuitive reaction. I get it.
Yeah.
But you have to look at the economics of it. An employee costs a salary, benefits, office space. An AI agent costs, what, pennies in compute. So if you can spin up 1,000 agents and they successfully complete 13% of complex engineering tasks without you doing anything, you have fundamentally changed the cost structure of software development. Yeah. It's not about perfection. It's about the marginal cost of labor dropping to near zero for these complex tasks.
I see. So it's a volume game. You just throw agents at the problem until one of them finally solves it.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And all the big players are in. You have OpenAI releasing Operator, Anthropic with Claude Computer Use, and Google DeepMind's Gemini agents. Deloitte predicts that by the end of 2026, over 40% of Fortune 500 companies will have deployed these autonomous agents.
Wow.
But the really fascinating part, and this is the part that changes how businesses actually run, is this concept of agent teams.
This was the part of the report that felt like a sci-fi movie. Microsoft's Autogen and Google's multi-agent systems, basically the robots are forming committees.
It sounds funny, but it's just replicating a human organizational structure. I mean, if you ask a single AI to build a software company, it will just hallucinate or get completely overwhelmed.
Sure.
But if you spin up a product manager agent whose only job is to define the scope, a coding agent that only writes Python, and a QA agent whose only job is to critique the code, they keep each other in check. The QA agent rejects the code agent's work until it passes. They collaborate.
That actually makes a lot of sense. You're solving the hallucination problem by having another AI call it out.
Exactly.
But this level of autonomy has to come with massive risks. I mean, if I give an agent the keys to my bank account and say, invest for me, and it decides to put everything into some volatile meme coin because it hallucinated a trend, who is liable?
That is the control problem, and it's the biggest hurdle right now. Just this year, in February 2026, security researchers demonstrated a prompt injection attack on an agent.
Okay, what's that?
They managed to embed a hidden command in a website. When the agent visited that site to do some research, the hidden command basically tricked the agent into leaking financial data.
So wait, the agent was just doing its job, it read a poisoned web page and got tricked.
Exactly. When you give an AI agency the ability to act, you also give it the ability to be manipulated in ways a static chatbot can't be. It's like giving a teenager a Ferrari. They might be a good driver, but the consequences of one mistake are infinitely higher than if they were just playing a racing video game.
That's a terrifying thought. We're going to need a whole new industry of, like, agent insurance or something.
Probably.
But let's bridge the gap here. We've got these digital brains that can plan and execute. But a brain in a server rack can't do the dishes. To impact the physical world, that intelligence needs a body.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to the second major trend. Physical AI, or the explosion of humanoid robots.
This is where the digital meets the concrete. For a long time, robotics was stuck in the Roomba phase, you know, highly specialized single-task machines. But the argument for 2026 is that if we want robots to be truly useful, they need to fit into the world we've already built.
And this is the why humanoid question, right? Why spend billions making a robot with legs when wheels are so much more efficient?
Because wheels can't climb stairs. They can't step over a pile of laundry. I mean, look around your house or a factory. Every door handle, every light switch, every countertop height is designed for a bipedal hominid about 5 to 6 feet tall with hands.
Huh.
So if you want a robot to work there without redesigning the entire building, the robot has to match the environment.
So let's talk players, because Elon Musk has been promising the Tesla Optimus for a while now. Is 2026 actually the year it happens?
It looks like it. Tesla is pushing the Optimus Gen 3 for mass production by late 2026. And the specs are impressive. Walking speed of 8 kilometers per hour, lifting capacity of 20 kilograms. But the real breakthrough is the tactile sensing. They've shown it handling an egg without cracking it.
Wow.
That requires immense feedback processing.
And the price, because usually this stuff is military-grade expensive.
Tesla is targeting under $20,000.
Okay, I have to stop you there. $20,000, that's less than a Honda Civic. Is that actually realistic, or is that just Elon being Elon?
It is aggressive, certainly. But you have to remember, Tesla is essentially a manufacturing company. They're betting they can stamp these out like they do with the Model 3s.
Right.
But even if they miss that price target, the competition is forcing costs down. You've got the Unitree G1 from China, which is already priced around $16,000.
The report mentioned the Unitree robot can do kung fu.
It can, which is arguably less useful for folding laundry, but it shows off the balance and the agility of the motors.
I don't know, a kung fu robot guarding the house sounds pretty useful to me, but beyond the gimmicks, where are these actually deploying?
Well, Figure O2, that's the robot from Figure AI, backed by OpenAI, is already in BMW factories. It's taking over those really repetitive inserting generic part A into slot B tasks. But the holy grail is the home. 1X Technologies has a model called NEO that is specifically designed for household chores.
Chores are the killer app. If it can unload my dishwasher, I will take out a loan for it. But what's the catch? There's always a catch.
The catch is the battery. It's always the battery. Right now, most of these humanoids run for maybe 2 to 4 hours. Tesla claims 8 hours for the Optimus, but that's under, you know, ideal conditions.
4 hours? That's not even a full workday. That's barely enough time to clean the kitchen and the living room before it needs a nap.
Exactly. And the other catch is fine motor variability. A robot can pick up a rigid box perfectly 1,000,000 times. But ask it to cook an omelet?
Yeah, that's tricky.
An egg is fragile, the shell breaks differently every time, the heat varies. That level of real-time adjustment is still very, very hard. So we aren't getting robot chefs in 2026. We're getting robot movers.
Got it. So the robot moves the stuff, but I still have to do the cooking. Well, let's look at the device I'll be using to verify that the robot did its job. We're all glued to our phones, but the shape of that rectangle is finally changing. Trend three, the foldable revolution.
It feels like we've been hearing foldables are the future since, what, 2019. But the data shows 2026 is the adoption cliff. The IDC report cites 73% growth in Q1 2026 alone. This is moving from early adopter toy to standard flagship.
And the hardware is getting kind of ridiculous. I was looking at the Huawei Mate XT Ultimate. It's a tri-fold.
This is a tablet killer. It folds twice. So you have a 6.4-inch phone mode, a 7.9-inch medium mode, and then you unfold it completely to a 10.2-inch screen. It is literally an iPad that fits in your pocket.
That sounds amazing, but also incredibly thick. Are we just going to be carrying bricks around again?
That's been the criticism, but they are getting thinner. The real story here, though, isn't Huawei. It's the rumors about the iPhone 17 Fold.
The moment Apple does it, it becomes real for normal people.
Exactly. Apple rarely does first, they do best. The leaks are pointing to a September 2026 launch. 8-inch internal LTPO OLED screen.
Okay, let's pause on LTQO OLED. Why does that actually matter to someone listening?
It's all about energy efficiency. It lets the screen adjust its refresh rate dynamically. So if you're reading static text, it drops to 1 hertz. If you're gaming, it goes to 120
Oh,
hertz.
I see.
For a device with a massive screen, that is absolutely critical for battery life. If they didn't have that tech, the phone would be dead by noon.
And the price. Apple isn't exactly known for their budget devices.
The rumors are sitting around $799, which, ironically, actually undercuts the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 6. If Apple comes in cheaper than Samsung, they could just wipe the floor with the market.
But I have to ask about durability. I had a buddy with an early fold, and the crease in the middle looked terrible after a year. Has that actually been solved?
Solved is a strong word. Improved, yes.
Yeah.
The consensus is a 200,000-fold limit for a heavy user, someone checking their phone 100 times a day. That's about 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
But the physics of bending glass and plastic mean that eventually the material degrades. You are buying a device with a mechanical lifespan that is shorter than a solid slab of glass.
So it's a trade-off. You get a cinema in your pocket, but you might have to replace it sooner. Now, speaking of using these devices, let's talk about how we're paying for things, because the way money moves is changing just as fast as the hardware. Trend number four, embedded finance 2.0.
This is the trend that feels the most like magic, I think, but also carries the most subtle risk. The whole concept is invisible payments. We're deleting the checkout page.
So I don't have to type in my card number. Because honestly, that friction is the only thing keeping my Amazon addiction in check.
Well, prepare for your addiction to get worse. Embedded finance just means the payment happens within the experience, naturally. We've seen it in Uber for years. You just get out of the car.
Right.
But now it's hitting everything. Gaming is a huge driver. In Roblox or Fortnite, creators are earning and spending real value without ever leaving the ecosystem. But the physical world is next.
Like the connected car stuff.
Exactly. Tesla and BMW are rolling out systems where the car pays for parking. You pull into a spot, the car handshakes with the smart meter via an API, negotiates the rate, and pays. You just park and walk away.
Walk me through the tech stack there quickly. How does the car actually talk to the bank?
It uses what we call API banking. Banks have opened up their back-end infrastructure to software developers. So the car app isn't just sending a request to a website. It's communicating directly with the banking ledger. It's secure, it's instant, and it's completely automated.
It sounds super convenient, but the psychological aspect of it worries me. There's this concept called the pain of paying. You know, when you hand over cash, you feel it. When
Yeah.
you swipe a card, you feel it less. When you don't do anything.
You don't feel it at all, and that is the danger. The sources specifically warn about the gamification of spending. If you're scrolling TikTok and you can buy a product with a single tap without ever seeing a total cost screen, your brain doesn't register the loss of resources.
Right.
For gambling and gaming, this is potentially predatory. It removes that moment of reflection where you ask, "Do I really need this?"
So we're all going to need to develop some serious self-control protocols. Okay, final trend. We've talked about how we spend money, but what about how we invest it? We're seeing the rise of real-world assets, or RWA.
This is the bridge between the crypto world and the real economy. For years, crypto has been very self-referential, trading tokens for other tokens. RWA is about tokenizing physical assets, real estate, art, commodities, and putting them on the blockchain. BCG predicts this is a $16 trillion market by the end of 2026.
That's a massive number, but explain the mechanics for me. If I buy a token of a building, what do I actually own? Do I get a brick?
Effectively, yes. I mean, imagine a $100 million commercial tower in New York. You can't buy that. But if the owner tokenizes it, they split the ownership into, say, a million shares at $100 each. If you hold that token in your digital wallet, you are legally entitled to your share of the rent revenue that building generates.
So it democratizes access to these high-tier investments. That sounds great in theory, but here's my skepticism. What happens if the building burns down? Or the owner runs away with the rent money? The blockchain says I own it, but the real world is messy.
We've hit on the Oracle problem, that disconnect between digital truth and physical truth. And this is why regulation is the biggest driver right now. In places like Switzerland and the UAE, they are passing laws that make the digital token legally equivalent to the physical deed.
Okay.
So if the building burns down, your token is your proof for the insurance claim.
So the token isn't just a JPEG, it's an actual legal contract.
Exactly. And that's why banks like JP Morgan and HSBC are diving in. They aren't doing it for the crypto vibes. They were doing it because settlement is instant. If you sell a building today, it takes months of paperwork. If you sell a tokenized building, the transaction settles in seconds, 2:30:47.
Liquidity. You can sell your share of a skyscraper as easily as selling a stock.
That's the promise. But we have to be clear. This is still maturing. Liquidity is a real challenge. Just because you want to sell your token doesn't mean there is a buyer waiting at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Right. It's not quite the New York Stock Exchange yet, so let's pull this all together. It feels like there is a common thread running through all of this. We have agents doing the planning, robots doing the physical work, phones that morph into whatever screen we need, payments that happen without us looking, and investments that are broken down into these tiny liquid pieces.
The thread is the removal of friction. That is the story of 2026. Agentic AI removes the friction of process of planning and coding. Physical AI removes the friction of labor. Embedded finance removes the friction of transaction. And RWA removes the friction of entry into wealth.
The frictionless future. It sounds efficient, but also a little daunting. If all the friction is gone, what are we all supposed to be doing?
That is the ultimate call to preparation. I mean, for developers listening, you need to stop learning just syntax and start learning agentic workflows, how to manage a team of AIs. For businesses, if you're making your customer click five times to pay, you're dead.
Yeah.
And for all of us,
we
need to prepare for a world where our utility isn't defined by the tasks we do, but by the directions we give.
That's the thought I want to leave everyone with today. In a world where the agents run the company and the robots scrub the floors, the question isn't, how do I do this job? The question becomes, which job is worth doing?
That is the multi-trillion dollar question.
And one we'll probably be trying to answer for the rest of the decade. Thanks for going on this deep dive with us. Good luck with your new robot overlords. And we'll see you next time.